KNR.
Back here with you on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850. Glad you're with us on this rainy, soggy Thursday. Make sure you give yourself a little extra time today. The weather is changing quickly, as is the case usually in Cleveland this time of year. Hopefully the weather forecast will improve, by the way, for opening day on Monday for the Indians. Right, yeah. Now 45 and a rain snow mix.
It's hard to top last year. Last year was gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Cleveland in April, you're not going to get 2 years in a row like that.
I will tell you some great stories a little bit later on from 2007 and having snowball fights and being threatened to be thrown out of the stadium and some shenanigans we got into, never mind the adult beverages. But right now, we're going to go to the Ohio Business Machines hotline, and we truly appreciate his time. He's a very, very busy man. Formerly of MMQB, Robert Mays joins us, now staff writer at The Ringer, and we'll get into that in just a few minutes, but happy to have him on, and let's see if my computer is working, and if I can bring Robert up. There we go. Robert, welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850.
Thanks, guys. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. Hey, great article that you put out on how Jared Goff might be the next Tim Couch, and in a good way. Your last article for MMQB involves Jared Goff and the Cleveland Browns quarterback toils, I guess you could say. What made you come up with this for your final article at MMQB?
It was actually me and Peter King kind of chatting at the Combine a little bit, and just the idea that we wanted to write about Jared, but we didn't want to write just a straight profile of him just because those things come out all the time this year. So what other slant could we have to it? And obviously the Browns are the first QB needy team in the draft, picking second overall. And obviously the Browns' history at that position has not been great as of late. So just kind of blending those two things. The fact that you have this guy who may end up there, and you have this team who really hasn't had a track record that they want with guys at that position. And what did he think about that? How did he fit into that history? So that's kind of how we got there.
And I'm just wondering, first off, just kind of for the historical perspective, just the opinions around the league about Tim Couch and how, you know, it just seems like he's, because of the situation he found himself in, has maybe been devalued, I guess, from what kind of quarterback he really was for this team.
Yeah, that's what Bruce Arians said. And I think that Peter had told me that in conversations he's had casually with Bruce in the past, that there was this idea that the Browns chewed up and spit out Tim Couch. This wasn't necessarily a Tim Couch problem. Bruce shied away from that a little bit, but it was mostly just that the situation in and of itself, not the venom and the toxicity of the organization, just the actual players on the field. And then you just get into everything else. You know, the fact that this is a team that could have had Donovan McNabb and they picked Kellen Winslow. I mean, there's just so many little points of interest along their quarterback history, Tim Couch being one of them.
Talking with Robert Mays, formerly of the MMQB, now with The Ringer. Bill Simmons' new website, and we'll talk to him a little bit about that coming up here in just a few minutes. But the number of comparisons, Robert, I mean, you talk about a Bleacher Report article asked Cal offensive coordinator Tony Franklin if his new quarterback reminded him of any he'd come across in the past, and he talks about Tim Couch. And then, you know, Couch's head coach at Kentucky, Hal Mumme, considered the godfather of that famed air raid offense. And then Couch's final two seasons was an offensive coordinator named Mike Leach. His eventual offensive coordinator in Lubbock, then when he moved on with Sonny Dykes, who was Goff's coach at Cal. So many different things tying these two guys together. It really is impressive. If you do the 6 degrees of separation, there aren't two. I don't think you're getting to six.
No, it doesn't take six. And honestly, Sonny Dykes or Tony Franklin, who's his offensive coordinator, was on the staff as well at Kentucky back in 99 when Tim Couch was there, 98, excuse me. He was the running backs coach, though, so he didn't necessarily have any contact with Couch. So these are all the same sphere, and that's definitely an interesting part of it, especially when you consider that when Goff committed to Cal, there was no connection. I mean, when he committed, it was to play for Jeff Tedford. So it's kind of a weird little combination of things. And when Tony Franklin told Michael Weinrub that, there was no way for him to know that he was coaching the best quarterback in the country, and the team that would be in the position to take him is the one that took him, Tim Couch. So this isn't a, with hindsight, oh, now it's the Browns, maybe we can make that comparison. This is a comparison made without any of those connections, even a remote possibility at the time.
Yeah, And this has been mentioned with Goff before, but this is something you hit on too, is just the fact that Goff went through about as bad of a season as you can experience as a starting quarterback for a team, but it didn't seem to really hurt his development. What was he able to do to kind of push through that and get a program up to 8 wins, which is a big achievement after going 1-11?
I think the way that he talked about it is that every quarterback says they have a short memory, but he's just very, very positive. You know, the one game that he really hated about his career was the Oregon game, his sophomore year, when he fumbled just a million times and there was rain. And it's kind of why Pep Hamilton doused his hands at his pro day for that exact game, just because that was the concern about whether he could hold on to the ball. But outside of that game, you don't really hear him talk about the negative elements of being a Cal. Even that game against Utah this year where he threw 5 interceptions and really sent Cal's season in a different direction than where it seemed to be going. He talks about that game more like it's the one that got away, not, man, I played so terribly. So we could have won that game at the end. That's how he frames it. So I think he just has the mental makeup to be someone who can handle all that stuff. And I also think that being a Cal guy his entire life, going to games at Cal, watching Marshawn Lynch, watching DeSean Jackson, the idea of bringing that program back to some sort of prosperity was attractive to him. That's why he didn't leave when Tedford left. That's why I think that he stuck through it that first year. The idea of taking it back to a place of prominence was something he really wanted to do. And at the same time, it's something he wants to do with the Browns if they want to take him.
Talking with Robert Mays, you can read his article on mmqb.si.com about Jared Goff and being possibly the next Tim Couch for the Cleveland Browns and how it's not a bad thing. His last article for MMQB. Robert, if you take Jared Goff out of California, is he as successful?
I mean, that's the question about him, right? Is in bad weather, is he a guy that's going to be able to mostly hang on to the football? This is the hands question that's come up over and over and over again. He's the same size hands as Tony Romo. So, I mean, it's quarterbacks have been successful with that makeup before. And that, to me, is the only concern. If you take him outside of California and you have the wind and some of the rain, that's a problem with arm strength for some guys that are more accuracy-based passers. But even though he doesn't have a cannon, he has more than enough arm strength to survive in pretty much any single climb.
The thing we keep hearing about a Carson Wentz is how much upside he's got and how much of potential he has as a quarterback. I'll ask, one, why don't we hear that as much with Jared Goff? And two, what do you think he can groom into when he gets into the NFL?
I think we don't hear it as much with Goff because that's not the appeal to Goff. What is appealing about Jared Goff is where he is now. His ability to manipulate defenses, how much he audibled at the line of scrimmage, the type of throws he had to make. I mean, when you look at Jared Goff, you see a complete polished product. So there's no reason to sell his upside because the upside isn't what's worth selling. With Wentz, there's going to be an acclimation period. There absolutely is. People talk about him being a pro-style offense, and that's true in some ways, but if you watch those North Dakota State games, there's a ton of motion. There's a ton of weird play action. And the way that I compare the two is that, in my mind, Jared Goff is able to manipulate a defense on his own. At North Dakota State, defenses were manipulated, but they were manipulated by the scheme. So I think that if you put Carson Wentz in the right positions, he can be successful. But Jared Goff puts himself in those positions. And to me, that's the biggest difference between them.
Can Jared Goff be a day one starter in the National Football League?
Is that the best idea? I think so. I think he can. And I think that if you're taking a guy second right now, you probably should. Especially if Cleveland was to retain a guy like Mitchell Schwartz, which they didn't. And you're sitting there with Joe Thomas and Mitchell Schwartz and Joel Bitonio. In my mind, of course you throw him out there. It doesn't matter if you have no receiving talent. As long as he doesn't get his brains beat in, it's worth having him on the field to have the reps. Now that offensive line is more of a question, so I think that there's an argument against it. But I think with the audible power he had at Cal, with the control he has of the game, the way that he can look off safeties and just make all the right throws, he's the type of guy that could be successful right away.
And the question may be with the offensive adjustment. Is there a concern about the type of offense he ran at Cal compared to what he'd face in the NFL?
Sure. I mean, that air raid is all shotgun. He never worked out from under center. So that's going to be a concern. But I also think that offensive coordinators right now have done a really good job of helping quarterbacks with that transition. And Robert Griffin is the most classic example, obviously. Goff wasn't in quite such a gimmicky offense as the one Griffin ran. But there's going to be some transition with his footwork, more or less, coming out from under center. As far as reading defenses, routes, all those kind of things, I think that he's able to do that. And one of his best traits is how good his feet are in the pocket after the snap. So if he can transition that to how good he is coming out from under center, I don't think he should have any problems whatsoever.
Robert, I got to ask, you cover the NFL, you're dialed in as well as anybody, especially working with all the MMQB staff that you work with. What's the thought on RG3 here coming to Cleveland?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I think it's so hard for me to get a finger on it just because you're going to bring him in, but you also have McCown. So if you brought him in to be a backup, didn't you already have a reliable one? It's hard for me to trace all the pieces. And maybe they don't take a quarterback at number two. Maybe they say, we don't like either. And that's the thing we'd never know, right? We try to throw quarterbacks at these teams that need them. But that's a position where if you're not sold on the guy, you can't take him. It's easy to miss on a defensive end or a linebacker or a wide receiver at number two. If you do that, you can survive. We don't care about Justin Gilbert as much as it hurts. But if you miss on a quarterback at number two, you're going down with him. And I think that this new regime, it would make sense if they weren't totally in love with either one of these guys to say, well, whatever, we'll take DeForest Buckner and figure it out later. That's not out of the realm of possibility to me.
Robert, if you are the Browns and you aren't sold on those quarterbacks, what's the player that most intrigues you at that number two spot? Or do you trade down?
Oh, man. I think that it depends on what you think of. I mean, if you can trade down, trade down. I mean, this is the most barren roster in the NFL. It's not like they need one guy and they're in the playoffs. They need 10. So if you can get some more picks, then go get them. To me, it's what you think of Jalen Ramsey. What position does he play for you? Is he a guy that can come in and take over for what Tashawn Gibson was supposed to be? Do you think he's more of a corner? In that case, corner's kind of a spot where you have some decent talent, even though Tremont Williams is a little long in the tooth. So I think he's the most talented player in the draft, but I like DeForest Buckner. And with Ray Horton, he's a guy that likes to move his guys around the defensive line. I mean, you see what a guy like Jarrell Casey did last year in Tennessee. And Buckner is that positionless, I can throw you at offenses in a lot of ways type of player. So I think they probably go with one of those two, just because the most glaring hole on the roster is wide receiver, but there's not a guy that's worth taking at number two. There probably will be at 32, but that's something you have to address later on.
Robert, before we let you go, obviously, I mentioned it, your last article at MMQB was this one involving Jared Goff and, you know, the Cleveland Browns. Going on to a different opportunity, though, with The Ringer. When is that site going to go live, and what can you tell us about The Ringer, Bill Simmons' new project that we're all pretty excited about?
I don't know when the site's going to go live. I think that's something they're still trying to figure out. I guess we're still trying to figure out at this point. But you can subscribe to the Ringer newsletter. It comes out at least a few times a week. I'll be in there tomorrow, actually writing about the Browns again. So that's something to look out for. It just pops into your inbox. You know, we have a lot of great people writing there about a myriad of different things. And then the rest of the site, I mean, I think that it's a lot of the same people who worked at Grantland. So it's not going to be the same as Grantland, but if you liked the type of material that was there, the intelligence and the thought and kind of the heart as well that went into it, I think you're going to get a lot of the same stuff at this site. And we're going to cover everything, and we're going to cover everything in a way that we hope no one else is. I think that the podcast presence is going to be overwhelming in a way that is a good thing. I think that there's going to be a ton of voices talking about things in fun ways. So I don't know. You know, I'm as excited as anybody. When I wasn't officially working there and it was already going, I was a fan, and as I was a fan of Grantland when I was there. So it would be hard to be more pumped up than I am to get things going over there.
Well, we love your work, and we appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us today. Really love the article. We encourage anybody to go on to mmqb.si.com to check it out. Jared Goff, the next Tim Couch, and why that's a good thing. Continued success, sir, and appreciate the time, and best of luck at The Ringer.
Absolutely, guys. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You got it, man. Anytime. That's Robert Mays joining us on the hotline. Some interesting stuff from him today.
And it's a shame we couldn't have Nathan in studio. I don't know if he could have held back his excitement about the Goff talk.
We'd have to hear it for the next 40 minutes. Exactly. On the key, as I look down at it, it's 2:20. But he had some good things to say.
Oh, yeah.
And it is interesting, the number of people that, you know, somehow are all intertwined from Tim Couch to Jared Goff and how they've all been involved in both of these guys' lives.
Yeah, and it's funny looking back at that 99 draft because clearly of the three quarterbacks taken early, Donovan McNabb had the best career. But if we remember back to the time, McNabb wasn't even in the conversation for that number one pick. It was between Couch and Akili Smith.
Akili Smith.
So it's great. And McNabb was booed by the Philly fans for going number two.
You couldn't even hear the interview.
Yeah.
They were booing him so bad.
and he turned out to be pretty good. So it's just – that's why this is such – it can be a science, but it's a very inexact science when it comes to knowing how these guys fit. And there's so many more circumstances that are at play that even go beyond a quarterback when you're drafting them that early.
All right. More of your phone calls. If you want to comment on Robert May's article, I encourage you to go on to mmqb.si.com to check it out. Great article from him. Gary, we'll get to you. Byron in Columbus, we will get to you as well when Cleveland Browns Daily continues after this timeout on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here on Cleveland Browns Daily, it's Gibbs and Gribbs with you till 3 o'clock. The Golden Boys coming your way at 3 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, Bruce Hooley live from Believeland, the red carpet event. I believe Ernest Biner going to be there. I heard Jim Brown might be there as well.
Wow.
A number of Craig Elo. That's right. Nice. Craig Elo going to be there tonight. And he will have a number of people as we get set for the worldwide debut at the Palace Theater, part of the Cleveland Film Festival of Believeland and new ESPN 30 for 30, produced by a Clevelander. And looking forward to seeing that. If you don't have a ticket for it this weekend, I know most of the shows are standing room only already for it and for the showings, even after the premiere. It will air on ESPN on May 14th. So be sure to check that out. Biggest takeaway from Robert Mays?
I think he's a big Goff fan. I think yeah, and that's okay. the people who are fans of Goff are very firmly believing that he is the guy that's ready to go. And I think that's clearly what he – when you compare Goff and Wentz, that's the most common thing you hear is that if you have to pick between one to start your first game of the season, Goff is most likely the guy. But then when you hear people talk about Wentz, they think he has maybe the higher ceiling as a quarterback. And if you're the Browns in a position where you have Robert Griffin III who can maybe play some games for you in the first couple of years and you let Wentz develop, that's where Wentz becomes intriguing. But I think that because of all of our attention to Wentz's upside, we're forgetting that Goff could maybe get better too, and he can get bigger, and he can look more like a prototypical AFC North quarterback if you give him time because he's gained weight every single year. So it's an intriguing thing, and I don't think these two guys are maybe as polarizing. Like I don't see many people who are so strong with one that they're against the other, like you might have seen last year with Mariota and Winston, two very different guys. I think these two quarterbacks are very different, but I get the sense among Browns fans that even if you take the one that maybe the fan didn't prefer, they're probably going to be okay with the other guy.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I still have a problem with Wentz being a 1AA guy. And, yeah, it's 1AA in my eyes. It's not FBS or FCS or whatever the heck they're calling it. I still have an issue with that. I can't get over the fact he's only started 18 games.
Yeah, that was that. I'm maybe more concerned with that than I am the competition level.
But if you have a guy like RG3, maybe he's the right guy because then he can sit for at least a year.
Right.
And if you've got McCown as well, then you've got two guys in front of him.
Yeah, we just know that in a city like Cleveland with fans as passionate as this, you got the number one pick sitting on the bench and
the
things aren't going right on the field. People are going to want that guy out there, so you got to be, I would say, staunch in your ways of sticking to that plan and not maybe pulling the trigger. I think that was Jacksonville's plan initially with Bortles.
Yep.
But he ended up seeing the field a lot earlier than I think they expected, and I think it helped ultimately. But he was a guy that they drafted at number three saying, this guy's got to wait.
Well, and that's the question is, you know, the earlier he plays, the quicker you get the lumps out of the system.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, understand that the success rate could really be an issue, and he could be, you know, he could have such horrible luck and be so bad that he never recovers from it. in that situation. So when do you play him? When do you not play him? That's a big question. Let's go to Byron in Columbus now on ESPN 850. Byron, thanks for waiting.
You know, you guys are driving me crazy. You know, Hugh Jackson goes to the combine. He goes, "Oh my God, it's just the absolute best I've ever seen, quarterback or otherwise." That he was so enthralled with him and Tony Grossi and you guys and Bruce Drennan and really Big Show. You guys are going golf nuts, and I'll tell you what, I think Jackson's going to take Wentz. That's my just honest opinion. I think he's the best quarterback.
Why do you think he's the best quarterback?
One of them.
I've seen him in most of his games, and he's got the build. He's got the arm. I mean, if Dallas wanted him at number four, what's that tell you? Dallas must know quarterbacks too. Why, if he goes to Dallas and he kicks everybody's butt, you guys are going to be tired of talking about golf. That's all I got to say.
Byron, I would totally agree with you. And that would be a very Cleveland-ish type thing to happen.
I've said this before, but I'm seeing it when I believe it that Dallas takes a quarterback at number four.
Yeah.
I just can't get past this is a playoff team with Romo as their starting quarterback. So why don't you get a player that can help you get there with a healthy quarterback?
They got a nice little added running back this year in the offseason. You've got one of the premier wide receivers. When he's healthy, as much as I hate him and hate to admit it, you have a top 10 quarterback in the National Football League. You've got talent. You're a good team that had a really bad year, and now you're in position to get a guy that can put you into the playoffs for a couple of years to come.
Yeah, that's why I just again, if they do it, I guess I understand the logic where since you're established enough where you're probably never going to be in this position again. Even if you do go through rebuilding, I think the Cowboys would be like a 10 or 11. Like they may never be in this high of a spot in the draft again. So that's why you go get a quarterback. But I just don't. The NFL is so win now, especially when you've got a quarterback with a shrinking window. I just don't see it. But I could be wrong, and that's why all this talk with the Eagles and a quarterback. I don't know why you've invested heavily in two guys at the quarterback position that the Eagles have. And that's why it's just it doesn't add up. But I think this is the time of year where smoke screens abound, and you're trying to entice some trade offers and bring it in. But we'll see if the Eagles do.
Clouds people's judgments. Things start to go a little haywire, as we've seen in this building on draft night. Let's go to Gary now, waiting patiently. Gary, thanks for waiting. You're on Cleveland Browns Daily.
It's Jerry.
Yeah, you there?
Yeah, it's Jerry.
Jerry.
Sorry, yeah,
Jerry. What can we do for you today?
Well, you started out the show with this nostalgia and why the Cleveland Browns have such a loyal following. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm 78, and it didn't start with Jim Brown or Brian Sipe or Bernie Kosar. Those guys were just a continuation of the tradition. It all started back when I was a kid. 10, 11, 12 years old or whatever. I mean, when they left the All-American Conference and got in the NFL, the town went nuts. I know my uncles did and my dad and everybody I knew. We were just so hungry for football, and it just continued on. To me, I raised my kids, five kids. They're all Browns fans to this day, even my grandkids. And there are not too many of us around, but we still remember, and we're still hoping.
All right, Gary, thanks for the phone call, and appreciate you waiting on hold. It is what it is. We've all grown up. We've seen great moments, and we've seen not so great moments. And that is what the new Believe Land 30 for 30 that comes out on May 14th and debuts tonight is all about.
You go through the not-so-great moments just to build up that makes the great moments even that much better.
Yeah, exactly. All right. When we come back from this time out, a little fact or fiction Mike Dreamer has put together for us today, and we'll do that. More of your calls at 216-578-0850, your tweets at Browns_Daily, at Andrew_Gribble, and at BGSU Gibbs. All that and more. We got about 27 minutes left of Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here with you on Cleveland Browns Daily, Gibbs and Gribbs in for the vacationing Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm. Gribbs and I will be back tomorrow. Wilhelm might be back with us, not sure, but we will keep you apprised of that for the latest on any Browns news as we get closer to players reporting on Monday. Make sure you log on to clevelandbrowns.com. What do you got going on Browns.com these days, Mike?
You know, we've got just one more story today about just comments Hugh Jackson made at the owners' meetings, this one being about how everything they do goes around the quarterback. I think it's maybe a different kind of philosophy than maybe than stuff that was said by the previous regime, but I think it speaks to kind of the importance of the quarterback position, and Hugh really hasn't backed away from that at all. So I think that's good to put out there, and I think over the coming days it's just more draft. And you know, we were talking in the break about it's time to maybe write a little bit about DeForest Buckner. I mean, this is a guy that is rising and seeing it as a potential fit, and you know, maybe he's a guy that makes sense because he's someone that could easily be taken at number three to San Diego as well. I mean, this is a top five potential kind of guy.
Quietly has put together some outstanding film and a fantastic pre-combine, combine, and everything I've heard about a couple individual workouts he's been put through, just going off of the charts. No one's talking about it.
Yeah, and another thing we were talking about doing is kind of riffing off the 30 for 30 is 30 for 32, because I think I could probably come up with about 30 different players that could be possibilities at that number 32 pick, because this is a team that you're going to definitely take the best player available at 32, because there's not really one area of the roster. Maybe outside of tight end where I could see you going with position-wise at 32. I think it's wide open with what you could do with that number 32 pick.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, so we've had a very, very entertaining show. If you've just tuned in, we talked to Robert Mays, mmqb.si.com. Great article about how Jared Goff could be the next Tim Couch for Cleveland, and that would be a good thing. Great article. You can read him and make sure you give him a follow on Twitter as he moves over to The Ringer from MMQB, Bill Simmons' new website that's launching here soon. He'll actually be writing tomorrow about the Browns, he said. So we'll be sure to check that out. We talked about Believeland, the ESPN new 30 for 30 picture that's coming out. It debuts tonight at the Cleveland Film Festival downtown. It'll be on ESPN on May 14th, and getting your favorite memories and what makes you a Cleveland fan. How are you able to endure being a Cleveland fan? All that and more. Right now, though, time to bring in our producer, Mike Dreamer, for a little fact or fiction.
We ask the questions. You make the predictions. It's time to play fact or fiction.
All right, guys, how are you?
Good, buddy.
I'm doing awesome. Awesome. All right. So the first one, fact or fiction. I don't know where the liner is over in the side, but the first one, the Browns receiving the only F grade in free agency from the ESPN insiders was a little too harsh.
I would say fact.
Yeah, I'm going with fact just because, you know, I think this was a regime that was prepared for that. And I think that they've also addressed some needs in the first wave of free agency. I think it was understandable, and I think the public reaction was probably expected and understood, but at the same time I don't think it's the make or break type scenario that's maybe been played out by people outside the organization.
All right, ready for the second
fact
one?
Fact or fiction?
Right, I don't know where the liner is.
That's fine.
The new stuff is confusing me. All right. So the second one, fact or fiction, trading down from the number two spot should be seriously discussed by the Browns front office.
I'm going to go with a fact-ish on that one. I think that is...
What is that?
Non-committal.
I know. It's tough because I think it's something where if you are not sold on the quarterbacks, I think you should. But I think if you are sold on one of them, you got to use that. You can't... I don't think you can risk trading down and still getting the quarterback that you want because of the 49ers. I think they're a team that would potentially trade up to get that quarterback that you want, even if you think you could trade down and get him. So I would go, I'll say fact.
I would say fact. I think you explore any and all options. You have a lot of holes on this team that you need filled, the biggest one of which being quarterback. But, again, like Gribb said, if you're not 100% sold on these guys, take best player available or get the best offer that gets you multiple picks and move back a few.
Yeah, I do think, though, like it's I've been asked this before, the potential of trading down and still taking a quarterback, I think that's – with a position like that, I think it's risky. And I think – I don't know if you can get the guy you want
sure.
while trading down. I just don't think that it's a guarantee.
All right, we'll go on to the third one. Fact or fiction, pre-draft visits mean a lot.
Oh, yeah, I think fact because you get to, especially when you're looking for a quarterback, I think they matter. You've got to talk to them. You've got to, like, this is maybe your best opportunity to really get inside a player's head. I think the combine, it's a little rushed. It's kind of a more of a speed dating feel. I think the mood is maybe a little bit more relaxed. I think you can really pick a guy's brain. From an outsider's perspective, though, it's fiction because I think that these guys visit a lot of places and you get 30 visits.
All right, so here's my question. Why can you bring a guy in to meet with him but not work him out? Why can't you work him out here in this facility?
I don't know. it would be great. You know, I think I wonder, too, if you're a player, how many of those workouts do you really want to do? Because couldn't you can get pretty worn out if you're doing about like 10 or 11 of those.
Sure. But I mean, okay, say you're allowed to do 5 workouts. The player can pick which teams he wants to work out for. Who he wants to work out for.
Yeah, it's
it's weird to me that you can bring a guy in and you can talk to a guy and get to know a guy. Like are there any okay, so you know we've seen guys here today. no names, please, but there are people in this building today. If you're like, how long are visits allowed to be? Are there time limits? Do you know anything?
I don't know the specifics, but as we see them go by, it's just such a different feel than what these guys are getting at the combine. And but these guys, they're allowed to work out. Is it the offsite is where you're allowed to work out? These players, you hear about other players working out, but it's kind of a...
Yeah, Goff yesterday was working out for the 49ers.
But it's somewhere not near their facility. There's just so many rules and layers to what goes on. But I do think it's important, but I also think just because you brought in 30 guys doesn't mean you're drafting any of them. And you could easily draft a guy that you didn't bring in your building. I think that is definitely a possibility. But you do get a much better sense of these guys when you bring them in. And I think that is where they become important.
And I would say this, too. It's not just the 30 interviews here. How many interviews they do at the combine? We were going over that number when we were in Indianapolis.
60 you get.
Yeah. I mean, that's almost 100 guys you're talking to between now and the draft.
Yeah.
Plus scouting reports, plus tape, plus everything else. You know, there's a lot of research going into it. Next.
Number 4.
Oh, we got numbers.
All right. So for number 4, we're going to go Cleveland has the most loyal fans in professional sports.
I would say fact.
As a fact plus.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just the Cubs in as representing one entity. It's all three. And I think that it's for I don't know the population dynamics or anything we've got to be – Cleveland still has a small-town feel to it. It might be one of the smaller towns that does have three professional franchises. So I think all three of these teams matter so much to the fans here and what they've gone through, each one going through its highs that don't reach the highest point that you want, but definitely reaching the lowest of lows for all three, and people are still going to games, still as passionate as ever. Fans are treating this Cavs season like an NFL season. Every game is dissected and scrutinized, even though it's the NBA. The Indians are going to be the same way when it starts up, and we all know how we talk about the Browns. So it's a fact, double fact.
Exactly. Last one.
Number 5.
All right, guys, we're going to go to a different type of football, but I don't know if you guys seen this. Earlier today, the 5 players from the women's national team, the soccer team, have filed an equal pay lawsuit. Some of those players, real quick, were like Hope Solo and Alex Morgan, some of the bigger names. So for this question, I just wanted to ask you guys, Is the U.S. women's soccer team more popular than the men's?
I think they're better right now.
There's no question they are better. Popular, though, is tough, but, man.
I don't know.
I mean, looking at
some of those crowds watching the U.S. Women's World Cup.
All right, so here, we'll help you guys narrow this down. What team can you name more players from?
For me, it's the women's.
I think it's probably the women's team.
That probably is a good
Not
barometer
by many.
For popularity.
Yeah, I think that's – I mean,
I'm a soccer fan every 4 years.
I was super into the men's team during the last World Cup run. I could name a lot of those players. But then I now turned it on Tuesday, and I recognized Bradley and
Dempsey.
That's about it. And Dempsey. Those are the only two. And I feel like I know a little bit more than maybe the average or casual fan, but no, that women's team just reached super, super lengths of popularity, and it just shows what the power of winning. And I imagine if the men ever got to that point, this country would go bananas over it.
All right, Mike Dreamer, appreciate it. That was Fact or Fiction for today. We'll come back after this timeout, wrap things up. We'll take a couple more of your phone calls here as we wrap up Cleveland Browns Daily for a Thursday on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
All right, one final segment here on this Thursday, Gibbs and Gribbs with you on Cleveland Browns Daily. Back to the phones we go real quick. Let's go to Cam in Canada. Cam, welcome.
Hey, guys, good to listen.
What's going on, Cam?
I've really championed Wentz last year, and I've been championing Buckner about the last probably 2 months, and Ramsey as well. So I think you've got to go with the guys or the moves going to have the biggest thematic impact on the team. So Ramsey shrinks the field by a third. So he changes everything in the pass rush. It's, you know, in a non-talented secondary, he's going to change things. Buckner can come at you from every different angle, and he can cause massive confusion interior, even coming off the four eyes. So he'd be a great complement to Shelton. And Wentz, I mean, is who he is. I mean, you either want him or you don't. Great player. But the other guy that I'm thinking about is Zeke. And Zeke would have a massive systematic impact because he blocks, catches the ball. I mean, outstanding player in every way. So, but trading down is the other option. I think people need to chill just because former, you know, bad regimes have traded down and messed up. These guys know what they're doing. We got to stock the cupboard. So whatever we do, it's one of those four guys I mentioned, or trade down and see what happens with best player available.
All right, Cam, thanks for the phone call. I don't mind trading down once. I don't like the multiple trade backs.
Yeah, and I think it's just, things, and I think he made a good point. You can't hold the actions of previous regimes against this current one, but I think naturally it's for fans, it's impossible to forget bad memories. But, you know, it's, at the same time, If you trust what these guys are doing, that's the way is acquiring picks.
A very fast-moving 2 hours. Want to thank everybody for their phone calls and your tweets. If we did not get to your tweets today, I can assure you we will get to them tomorrow. Thanks to Robert Mays from The Ringer now, formerly of the MMQB, for joining us for a few minutes today. Andrew Gribble, great job, my friends.
No problem. I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow we'll see if Wilhelm's back with us. If not, it'll be Gribbs and I. We'll have the Friday forecast. I'm going to try to get someone to recap Notre Dame's Pro Day going on today. Will Fuller, an interesting potential prospect as well. Thanks to Mike Dreamer. The Golden Boys are up next with Aaron Goldhammer and Emmett Golden. I'm Jason Gibbs. This is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.